You're listening to an ESA podcast brought to you by the Ecological Society of America. ESA, promoting the science of ecology.
I'm Terrence Houston, and this is The Ecologist Goes to Washington, a podcast program from the Ecological Society of America, where I interview ecological scientists involved with public policy. Today, I'm interviewing Michael Levy with West Virginia University, one of this year's three graduate student policy award winners. A good bit of your master's research at West Virginia University focuses on surface mining. Could you talk a little bit about your research in surface mining and what prompted your interest in the subject?
I made the decision to come back to grad school after being out of school for a while by asking myself, what are the pressing issues of the time and where can I affect change? And I think there's no bigger issue today than the destruction of the natural environment. And so I thought that if I could just document that destruction and maybe demonstrate how we could run our industrial society in a better way, that I could make a difference. But what I found very rapidly was that science isn't always communicated to the public and to policymakers, mm-hmm. and that ecological understanding especially doesn't always make its way into policy and regulation. And so it was that failure that I saw in science affecting the political system that spurred my interest in communicating science to the public and to policymakers. But as for my research, I study surface mines in West Virginia as ecosystems. I'm particularly interested in how this 1977 law, the Surface Mining Control and Reclamation Act, affects the ecological outcomes of surface mines. It puts certain requirements on mining companies. They have to restore land to its approximate original shape. They have to establish ground cover. And it accomplishes some of its goals quite well. In the mining that happened before that law was passed, we saw terrible problems with erosion. We have these bare, lifeless spots. We don't see that anymore. But it also, there are places where it could be more effective. There are places, for example, the law requires that when mining happens, the topsoil is stockpiled, and then after mining is completed, it's reapplied to the land. And I should note, as a side note, in southern West Virginia, where the mountaintop removal mining is happening, that requirement is almost universally waived. So the law says that they have to store the topsoil while they mine, but that's almost universally exempted in mountaintop removal mines. But up here, where my mines are, they do that, and then when they reapply the soil, they run over it with heavy machinery multiple times, which is great for controlling erosion, but it leads to terribly compacted soil, which then it's very difficult for roots to penetrate, very difficult for water to penetrate, and so as a result, we see altered vegetation communities and altered soil properties, and that's what my research looks at, is how those alterations develop over time. So after they finish mining, to what extent do we see a return to normal conditions in terms of soil properties, vegetation, and soil microbial life?
In reference to your research on surface mining, what have you learned that you think would be of most important and helpful to policymakers to be aware of?
I think there are two things, and they maybe seem contradictory at first, but they I think it's really important to tease them apart. The first thing is that it really matters how mining is done and how reclamation is done. That when science is respected and incorporated and best practices are adopted, we see much better outcomes than when it's not. At the same time, no matter how well mining and reclamation are done, we don't see a return to normal, at least in the sort of medium to long term that we're able to observe so far. So the implications for that for policymakers are that regulation, that appropriate regulation that's informed by science and that is then enforced by inspectors, that really matters. And at the same time, we need to incorporate precautionary thinking into how we do these things, that we are losing some of the most biodiverse forests on the continent, and we're not going to see them return, at least, while our grandkids are alive. And so we need to be very selective about how we do these things moving forward.
You're also a columnist for West Virginia University's Daily Athenaeum. Could you talk about how you got involved with the paper, some of the subject matters you write about, as well as how it serves as a forum for you to air topics of interest to policymakers.
Mm-hmm. I got started basically because I was writing quite a few letters to the editor, and at some point it just made sense to sign on as a columnist. And I really enjoy it. It allows me to explore a wide variety of issues and gather information from disparate sources. Just recently, we've seen two gas wells begun to be drilled just outside of Morgantown, which is the city that I live in and that West Virginia University is in. And these are wells that will go down to the Marcellus Shale Formation. They'll be drilled horizontally, and they'll use hydraulic fracturing to get at the gas there. And these two wells that they've just started drilling are 1,500 feet upstream from our municipal drinking water supply, and they're just directly upwind from a local school. So I wrote a column about these wells, and as a lot of people have, there's been a lot of discussion about it. There's been really great citizen involvement and sustained response and outrage from lay people and from scientists. And I think that the community has done a very good job of communicating the risks and uncertainty involved with this kind of drilling to our local government. And now it seems that the Morgantown City Council is likely going to pass a ban to prohibit horizontal drilling and hydraulic fracturing within and around Morgantown, which would effectively stop these two wells that are putting our drinking water at risk. So I think that that's been really encouraging to see. I think that when science is communicated effectively, it's a very powerful tool for influencing policymakers.
So going back to the meetings you had on Capitol Hill, were there any aspects of what you said during the meetings that seemed to resonate particularly well with congressional staff?
Sure. When I talked with the Office of Representative McKinley, who's our congressperson, I made a point to emphasize how well Morgantown has done through the recent recession, and I think that that is due primarily to the university being here. And the university, of course, receives a huge influx of money from the NSF and other federal funding agencies. And so I think that really hits home. You know, when we can say that unemployment is several points lower here, and that's because of those dollars that are sustaining the community and doing good things at the same time, I think that really resonates.
In your application for the Graduate Student Policy Award, you expressed your desire to become more directly involved with communicating science to decision makers and the hope that this might increase both understanding and appreciation for our natural environment. Do you think you were effective in your efforts?
I hope so. You know, I think it's the work of a career, and I think that, I think it's the work of thousands or even millions of us. But I think we're witnessing this shift. I think that we are beginning to see an appropriate respect for the natural environment and how that sustains us. And I think that future generations will look back at this time and it'll look to them as maybe slavery did to us, where, you know, when we learned about slavery as kids in history class, we asked, how could they do that? How could everyone not be opposed to that? And I think that 100 years from now, when they look back at mountaintop removal mining and at the destruction of the environment that supports us, they'll ask, how could they do that? So I hope I'm being effective in affecting that change, and I think that there are a lot of us working towards that change, and I just hope that it happens before some of these really serious tipping points and feedback loops get to a point that we're not able to walk back from.
That was Michael Levy with West Virginia University. Thanks so much for listening, and please join us next time when The Ecologist Goes to Washington.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Ecological Society of America. Music was provided by Dr. Nicholas Gattelli. For a link to Dr. Gattelli's homepage, more information about ESA, or additional podcasts, please visit www.esa.org. Thanks for listening.